You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Daily Premier League action and reaction. This is Football Social Daily.
Hello, welcome to Football Social Daily. There is a cold wind blowing through the UK right now and 100% winter is coming. But it was just too cold for the White Walkers of Tottenham Hotspur as their match against Burnley was called off whilst Antonio Conte tries to turn those White Walkers into White Runners. Meanwhile, Manchester United will have to wait a little bit longer to welcome the man that they hope will make them once more Kings of the North, as Ralf Rangnick watched his future charges hold Chelsea to a draw under the stewardship of Michael Carrick. And everyone in the Premier League is getting ready for a box set of matches as we enter a double game week with all Premier League teams in action across the midweek. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, there are games this week. On today's podcast, we have got Sports Social's Niall McCaughan. How are you doing, Niall?
I'm great, Jim. Thank you very much.
And Sports Social's
Joel McTudor.
Right. We'll go with it.
Do you know what? I could re-record that. I'm just going to leave it. Joel McTudor, mainly because I couldn't think of any kind of Game of Thrones themed nicknames for you. I got bored by the time I'd done all the other stuff, so I thought I'd just crack on. We're not going to talk about the weekend's games, though, mostly on today's podcast. If you want to catch up on the weekend's action, then you can find last night's podcast with Fergal and the boys discussing the weekend's action, in particular that Manchester United draw with Chelsea. Because today on the podcast, we're going to start off by picking our heroes and villains from across the weekend. We're going to get stuck into some juicy transfer gossip and we're going to look at some of the most epic journeys made by football fans in the name of supporting their teams. But let's wrap up the weekend's action first with a game of heroes and villains. Who do you like? Who do you hate from the weekend? I'm going to do mine first today because I'm in charge and I get to pick. And my
so
hero,
no one can steal them.
Yeah, basically. My hero and villain are connected today because my villain is whoever decided to call off the Burnley versus Spurs football game for a bit of snow. It's cold water, boys. You can play in snow. If anyone has ever played Sunday League, they know it is possible to play in snow. And there is nothing better than watching a game of football in snow when it's absolutely tipping it down. I particularly enjoyed watching West Ham City at the end of the first half, when you could see City passing the ball around and they're like pretty patterns and the ball was leaving lines on the pitch. So you could kind of see these passing shapes being traced out. So whoever called that game off is a wrong un. And I'll tell you what, also the person who designed the winter ball for the Premier League.
Oh, we were just saying that. You couldn't even see it.
No, what's the point in that?
High vis. It was basically a
bring back the orange ball, we reckon.
Exactly.
100%.
So that needs looking at. So they're my villains of the weekend from the winter football. Did you enjoy the football that did happen in the snow, though? Were you both into that?
The only one that was in the snow was the City one, was it not?
There was a bit of snow for the Manchester United-Chelsea game as well, I think, wasn't there?
The pitch was pretty clear. I could at least see the ball, which was a bonus.
Niall, did you enjoy the wintry activity at the weekend?
Do you know what? My favourite bit didn't actually come from the Premier League or indeed English football. It actually came north of the border in the Scottish Premiership, where The second half of Livingston versus Rangers was delayed so they could clear snowballs off the pitch because the Rangers fans thought it would be funny to bomb a load of snowballs onto the pitch. They ended up going home with the 3 points as well, so it wasn't a bad day out for the Rangers supporters. So yeah, I did quite enjoy seeing that. Also equally linked to that, Burnley versus Spurs game being called off. Did you see the graphic that Tottenham Hotspur's Twitter page put out?
No.
It was a quote from Antonio Conte saying playing in snow is dangerous and it's bad for the players. We could get some injuries. But it was like a photo of him like kind of side smirking with some snow on his wig, basically. And it looked like he'd just released a Christmas album or something like that. It was the most ridiculous graphic. So, yeah, it's made for some good entertainment this weekend for sure.
I do say, in all seriousness, no, I think it was clear that game up in Burnley was never going to happen. I don't think they've got undersoil heating in Burnley. And the snow there was particularly bad. And they waited till 25 minutes before kickoff to call that game off, which means all the fans had come from up in London. There was a couple who came from Dallas. Took them 31 hours to get there. Niall's just showing us the Conte Christmas
album
cover.
Looks like a failed Wham album.
It's very good, that. That needs to go on our Sports Social Twitter page. We'll put it there, at Sports Social. So they could have given them a little bit more notice as to that game being cancelled. We will talk more about that Dallas couple shortly. But connected to that, my hero of the weekend is Sean Dyche. If there was one man that wanted that game to go ahead, it was going to be Sean Dyche. And seeing him walking around on the Turf Moor pitch without a jacket on, just like in shirt sleeves going, call this cold. Just like, there is a man dedicated to his bit, isn't there, in Sean Dyche. He was being a proper northerner and walking around the Turf Moor pitch without a coat on, without his big coat on. So he's my hero. So that were my, there's my flippant heroes and villains from the weekend. You can go for your hero next, Niall.
I can do my villain.
I'll do your villain first, then you can have a bit more thinking time on the hero.
My villain, or villains, are the Brighton supporters.
Oh, yeah.
For booing Graham Potter after a 0-0 draw at home to Leeds United, which unbelievably dredges them all the way down to the depths of ninth in the Premier League table, believe it or not. I can't believe that Brighton and Hove Albion have booed their own team after a 0-0 at home against Leeds. Now, they started the season very, very well. They were the surprise package at the beginning of the campaign. They were up in the top four for a fair few weeks at the start of the season. And yes, they've naturally tailed off, but that's because the teams that are above them, aside from probably Wolves, are all better than they are. I mean, take Wolves out of the equation. The teams above them are Manchester United, Tottenham, Arsenal, West Ham, Liverpool, City and Chelsea. They're all better than Brighton. Let's not forget Brighton, I think, finished one place above the relegation zone last season. And we were talking about how if they don't start finding the back of the net and being more tight at the back, they could be in the bottom three this time around. But Graham Potter's a coach who's won plenty of plaudits, not just from us neutrals and non-supporters of Brighton, but also from those within the game who think that he's doing an excellent job. I think he's one of the best British coaches we've got out there at the moment. And the Brighton fans have got some cheek to boo him. And I suppose I could even call Graham Potter my hero because he came out and actually gave it a little bit back to the fans and said, do I need a history lesson at this football club or something?
Very tongue-in-cheek comment from him, wasn't it?
But I can understand why he was frustrated, because Brighton have never been this high. Not in my lifetime, anyway. When I was growing up watching Portsmouth and we were in the Premier League, no one really gave a thought to Brighton, who were in League One and struggling and very nearly going out of business. And now the tables have turned, in all fairness. Portsmouth are a League One team and no one really gives us any thinking. But Brighton have come from nowhere. They've established themselves now as a Premier League team and they've been in the top flight for three or four seasons now, possibly even more. And yet the fans have got the cheek to boo their team.
Fans have a right to show their displeasure.
Oh, sure.
If they're not impressed with what's going on the pitch.
Which is what Graham Potter said, and I'm totally with him. I'm in his court. The fans absolutely have the right to boo if they want to, but I don't agree with them, much like what Graham Potter said. So they're definitely my villains for the weekend. There's no doubt about it. Now, I need to caveat that with saying it's not all Brighton fans that booed. There's only a small minority, a small section. But what do they expect? Are they expecting Brighton to finish in the Europa League places this season? Is that legitimately what they think? Because Graham Potter's got a point. They are a championship side at best. I mean, they used to play in Division One years ago. But if you're talking since the Premier League was established, they're a championship side at best. And they've laid the foundations behind the scenes. They've done brilliant groundwork. New stadium, infrastructure is there. Excellent coach in place. Good players they've got now as well. Just because they didn't beat a team like Leeds, who are a genuine big club in this country. You know, it's Leeds United, and they're a tough team to play against, even though they're struggling at the moment. So it's just one of those things which really spun my head this weekend. And I couldn't choose anyone else, really, when it came to the villain.
It was interesting because they also booed the substitution of Lamptey, who came off on the 76th minute, who was taken off. He was one of their brightest players, but he was taken off to protect the hamstrings.
Yeah, you mean Lamptey, who's been injured for 4 months,
exactly.
5 months. Yeah.
And you look at the stats, and actually, in terms of the attempts they had, 20 shots they had in that game. So it's not as if they were playing negative football or holding back or playing for the draw or weren't even playing well. They were having the chances, they just weren't converting those chances. So it was a slightly bizarre reaction from the Brighton and Hove Albion fans for a result that actually probably on the face of it isn't that bad, a 0-0 with Leeds United, albeit that Leeds United aren't in the best form at the moment. Joel, wrap it up for us. Heroes and villains, please.
I'm going to say my hero is going to be Jadon Sancho, just because I feel like his introduction at the club has probably just come at the worst time for him, where he came off the back of a Euro 2020 where he was literally made out to be the kind of villain of the country alongside Rashford. Then, obviously, he had his big money move under Solskjaer. We know what happened to Solskjaer. He ended up kind of isolating him out of the team because I don't know if he trusted him, despite the fact that he chased him for nearly 2 years, which was even more baffling. And then suddenly he comes back in the side and he's starting to show glimpses of exactly why we signed him, which is the fact that he's got so much energy on that right side. He's really tenacious in his play. And I think, you know, looking at the goal he scored against Chelsea at the weekend, if that happened 2 weeks ago, I don't think Rashford or Sancho would have even jogged to that ball at all. I feel like now that Solskjaer's gone, of course, I feel as though there's a bit of a upbeat kind of vibe in every team whenever that happens. But the fact that, you know, both of them absolutely paced it to Jorginho when he was isolated on his own, I feel like it was just a change in mentality. I think that's what the thing is with this United side. And for Sancho to just, I think the key thing for that goal for me was that I think every person who watched him when he was running was expecting him to square it to Rashford. And the fact that he just went for it on his own just shows that his confidence is growing a crazy amount now. I think maybe a month ago he probably would have passed that, and I think Rashford was way ahead of him.
Well, he should have passed it, shouldn't he?
I think Rashford was ahead of him, though.
Oh, you think it would have been
offside? Yeah, I think it would have been offside, so I think he had to anyway. But I think it just shows your confidence, because I think one of those goals like that is the hardest to score because you have too much time to think. You know, when you've got someone like Edouard Mendy, who's 6'5", waiting for you to kind of flinch and see who goes first. And I think considering how difficult the last months have been for United at the moment, he's been a bit of a source of inspiration for the side and a bit of a diamond in the rough for us, because there's been very far and few players have been standouts. And after that Villarreal game especially, I think he came off quite early actually in the Chelsea game. I don't know if he had a knock potentially, but he was probably my player of the kind of match. Even though we didn't have much of the ball, it was just the case he was being brave in possession. And I think too many players in the last weeks have been so, like, just not courageous at all, where they've treated the ball like it's a hot potato and they don't want to express themselves. And Sancho, that's what he's all about. Whenever you've seen Dortmund's highlights, he's always one for kind of nutmegging and, you know, making defenders look a bit stupid. And that's what is part of his game. And it went absent completely in the last months, where he's playing too safe. Now I feel like he's really coming into his own. And I think under Rangnick, I think he's going to absolutely love him, because he's got absolute energy, and in a pressing team, I think Sancho can lead the line in a press, which I think is what is really, really needed. So I think for me, he would be someone who in the next months is really going to come into his own, especially, like I said, under a manager who needs players like that. If you want to have a pressing team, you need players who have got the ability to press. And I think Sancho's got the capability to do that nonstop.
In terms of that game as a whole, and there's been a lot talked about that game, how lucky Manchester United were, because I think they were lucky. Chelsea should have won that game. They'll be disappointed with their finishing. But also the way Michael Carrick chose to set up that team, with Cristiano Ronaldo not starting. And I think it was said by, I forget who the commentary team were before the game, but they said if ever there's a team set up to draw a game 0-0, it was the Manchester United team that took to the pitch at the weekend. What did you make of the decision not to play Ronaldo and to go for the draw?
I think there was too much focus because when you looked at the first 10-15 minutes, we were pressing, but there wasn't really any method to it. I mean, Bruno Fernandes took the position of Ronaldo effectively as kind of this false nine. And yeah, he was pressing, but to a point. I don't think Ronaldo would have pressed as less if he was on the pitch. I think there was way, way too much attention on that. And, you know, I was looking at that Roy Keane and Carragher kind of handbags at the end of the game. And I just think it was just the wrong argument to even bring up because, yeah, we're not going to press as much with Ronaldo in the side. But if we're going to press, I mean, he started Bruno and I don't feel as though we pressed that much in the first half that anyway because Chelsea were just so dominant in possession regardless. And with Ronaldo, you know, everyone keeps making out like he's the problem, like he's the main thing that's going to let us down because Rangnick's coming in. I mean, when you look at Juventus at the moment, you know, they're like eighth or ninth in the league. They can't score to save themselves. He's not the problem. He is just a problem for other teams and you need to use him in the right way. But of course, he's 36 at the moment. You can't rely on him. Just like with Messi at the moment at PSG, you can't rely on him at the moment because he's in a new side and they have to adapt the games. They're just at that age now. I think everyone in the Premier League and in England kind of forgot that 11 years has passed since Ronaldo was in United. And the last time he was here, he was this dynamic winger who probably could press if he really wanted to. Now he's not that player anymore. He's a player who you just let him be up front and do his thing because he's a one-shot kill guy. And I think, to be honest, it's ridiculous, this argument around Ronaldo, because without him, we'd be out of the Champions League. I don't think we'd be as high in the Premier League either. So I'd rather have him on our team than against us. But I'd be interested to see how it fares under Rangnick because obviously it's pretty well publicised how much he likes his teams to kind of run like dogs all day, every day. So I'm interested to see, but I don't think he's the problem.
Who's your bad guy then? If Sancho's your good guy?
It's kind of a bit of a left one. I'll go with Marcel Brands for Everton because I saw Marcel Brands, the kind of sporting director for them, just because I saw the reaction of the Everton fans at the end of the game and they were super angry and, you know, well within the rights. I don't know if they've won one in the last 10. And they've been very, very disappointing. Obviously, they've had injuries to like Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who's any team who loses their star striker is obviously going to struggle big time in the league. I think he scored like 15, 16 goals last year. And that's going to be a big miss, especially when you're replacing him with Solomon Rondon, who got drafted in from, what is it, China or Qatar.
You put some respect on Rondon's name.
You know, he's a brute up front, but I mean, he's passed it in the Premier League. And when you look at some of the signings, I mean, obviously you got Marco Silva when he first came in, Marcel Brands, who was an absolute failure. Then he got Carlo Ancelotti in, who made some of the most questionable signings like James Rodriguez, Yerry Mina, Sigurdsson, Bernard, Alex Iwobi, Moise Keane, Andre Gomez. Like all these guys, they're not freebies. They were like 20, 30 million apiece.
The thing about Everton's transfer business is it looks like they've made sensible moves. Before those players step onto the pitch, it looks like they've made smart acquisitions. Who would have thought James Rodriguez wouldn't work, for example? With the exception of Iwobi, I think probably most of their deals, you've kind of looked at and gone, that makes sense.
To a point, because, you know, these players, like, for example, Yerry Mina, if anyone ever watched him for Barcelona, he was absolutely not. If Barcelona want to get rid of someone willingly, more often than not, they're not at the required level that everyone's expecting them to be. Mm. No top team is getting rid of their main players for that amount. It's obvious.
They've bought three players from Barcelona, haven't they? Luka Dean's been okay.
He's been the only one,
you know,
really.
Andre Gomez as well. He looks all right at times. He can be tidy on the ball. But is he going to be the sort of person that dictates the tempo of a game and wins you matches?
And probably he was poor for Barcelona.
You know, he's not going to get in their team, is he? Barcelona.
No, there's a reason they get rid of them. And there's a reason that all these teams like Everton willingly take them because they feel as though, because they've got the prestige of being from Barcelona.
Last summer, they got some of the signings right. I think Decore was a good acquisition as well. Recently, I think Alan was a decent signing as well. So I think they've made a couple of decent signings. And like I say, Luka Dean's a good player. But I think Mina's average. I mean, Dominic Calvert-Lewin was a bargain, but he's been injured for ages now. I just think some of the signings have shown glimpses of there being something there. But for every decent sign-in, you're right, Jim, there's a bit of a stinker. You know, there's a Iwobi.
It was obvious that he wasn't going
to
be a world
beater. I mean, Sigurdsson, they paid $50 million for Sigurdsson. And he's not been bad for Everton, but he's also not been great, particularly the last 2.5 seasons. He's been leaving a lot to be desired. And obviously, for reasons we won't go into, we haven't seen him this campaign. You know, $50 million, and I know I always bang on this podcast, players don't choose their price tags. But could you have got a better player for that price at that time when they bought him? Possibly. So, yeah, it's one of those where when Everton are doing badly, their signings are terrible. But when they're doing well, their signings are great. It's a funny one, really. I'm with Joel. I think that their recruitment in recent years has left a lot to be desired because it feels like they go out and sign players every window. And yet when the next window rolls around, we're going, oh, they need to sign some more.
And they're replacing the ones that they just bought. Precisely. For me, they seem to have more success with players who are, you know, the Fabian Delph types, the Andros Townsend types, where Everton have always had those kind of players where they just fight for the club. They need those kind of players, and the Everton fans kind of rub off on those types. When you've looked at Townsend and Damari Gray and Delph, who've arguably all been really key players for them at times, they cost like a combined, what, 5 million? And then you go out and you get in all of these Alexander Iwobis and Moise Keane and Andre Gomez, who cost nearly 80 million. And I'm sorry, but Rafa Benitez is a great manager, but you need everyone in that club to be operating at the same level. And Marcel Brands has failed that club on another level. I think he should be held to way more accountability, because it's not even just the players, it's the managers he's been getting. They've been failing.
Certainly not looking good for Everton at the moment. Bottom of the form table over the last 7 games, 5 losses, 2 draws. And you can't see where those wins are going to come from at the moment, particularly with the teams they've lost to over the course of the last 7 weeks. This is Football Social Daily. We'll be back talking transfers next.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back to Football Social Daily. Going to do some transfer chat. Every time I say this and we do it, we're creeping closer to the transfer window opening in January. We are just over a month to go yet, and a couple of rumours worth looking at, including a return to the Premier League for Luka Modric, 36 now, currently playing his football at Real Madrid. And he said, according to Super Deportivo, which is a Spanish newspaper, he said, Niall, he wants to come and play for Manchester City. Does it feel like that's realistic? Has he missed the opportunity to play for a team like City in the Premier League now at the age of 36?
Yes, I think he has. I don't think by much, mind you. I don't know whether there's a transfer fee involved in terms of this deal, or whether it would be a free transfer at the end of a contract.
Free agent next summer.
So, yeah, maybe if his contract had expired 3 years ago when he had just won the Ballon d'Or in 2018 and he was 33, I think that maybe there would have been some legs in it. But I'm not sure. 36 years old. They've got a pretty decent midfielder who's of a similar age in Fernandinho, and he's not really getting many minutes. I know Luka Modric is maybe slightly more offensive than Fernandinho is. Fernandinho plays in more of that deep line defensive midfielder role, whereas I think Modric is more of a conventional central midfielder and picks his head up and looks to play the ball forward a little bit more than Fernandinho does. But I don't think that there's a chance we're going to see Modric at Manchester City. I find it strange. I think that it was strange to think that they could have even signed Ronaldo, because it didn't feel very Pep. No. When Ronaldo was linked with Manchester City, you know, signing a 36-year-old, as good as a goal scorer as Ronaldo is and has still proven to be since his return to Manchester United, and the desire for Manchester City and the need for Manchester City to have a striker, I think it is unusual to see City linked with players of that age. 35, 36-year-olds being linked with moves to the Premier League, and I don't think it's for one final hurrah for the best of their career. I think it's, as you say, final payday more than anything else.
There have been instances of it working, though. Like you mentioned Thiago Silva. He's been excellent for Chelsea's Zlatan Ibrahimovic. When he came to Manchester United, he was pivotal for them when he played. Do you think we'll see Luka Modric in the Premier League, Joel? Maybe not at Manchester City, but potentially going back to Spurs? Maybe even a Newcastle United?
Oh God. It's like I said before, there's a reason that the likes of Real Madrid and Barcelona do not offer contracts for their 35-year-old plus players. Like, you know that Real Madrid side who got Ledesma in the 3 Champions Leagues in a row? Obviously, you've had Sergio Ramos, Ronaldo, Modric, probably obviously Varane's left. All of these players, they've not left really of their own accord, apart from probably Varane, because he's still in his peak, I would say. Whereas, you know, obviously Sergio Ramos, he wasn't offered a contract towards the end. Modric wasn't, I don't know if he's going to be offered a contract. It is a case for me of the fact that the Premier League clubs see these big names and they have glamour around them as if they're still up to the standards that they were you know, when they were winning all these Champions Leagues and when they were getting nominated for all these awards, when they're probably 2, 3, 4 years too late. And they end up in a really big dilemma where the end, like, let's say, for example, City offered Modric a 2, 3 year contract. It'd be good for that 1 year. Then in the second year, they'd be trying to move in on when he's on £200,000 a week. And it never ends well, really. They'll probably get some good quality out of him. Like, you don't lose your quality, but he's a dynamic midfielder. He's not a guy who, if he was like, for example, a Toni Kroos type player who sits, I would take him all day, every day. But Modric is a dynamic player and he's a bit of a box to box. And in the Spanish league, sure, you can your legs can kind of adapt to that, I would say. Mm. But in the Premier League, week in, week out, imagine Modric right now in the Christmas period. He wouldn't survive it. And as good as he is, he's 36. Like, his mind's probably faster than his feet now. And he's an amazing player. He's done amazing things for the game. But I think for me, it's too late. It's 2, 3 years, a little bit too late. Mm. But saying that, though, because Pep's teams completely dominate possession, they strangle teams, yeah, he probably would do well in that side. Whereas, for example, if he came to us at United, it would be an absolute disaster because he would have to work 10 times harder.
I'm not sure I'm standing for this ageism. I mean, well, I'm 42 and saying my brain is quicker than my feet. I mean, my brain's not particularly quick.
If you look at the oldest players in the Premier League, most of them are goalkeepers. The oldest players that have actually played minutes, Ben Foster's the oldest, 38. But then you look at some of the rest of the names, in the top six in particular, you've got Fernandinho and Fabianski. One's a goalkeeper and one's been in the league for years. And then you've got Ronaldo, Thiago Silva, both recent signings. Ashley Young, who's a recent signing, who's come back to the Premier League from Inter Milan. They're all signings that have been made in recent seasons. Mm. And, you know, you're talking about the oldest players in the Premier League. I mean, number 13 on this list, oldest players to play minutes this season. One of them's Edinson Cavani, a recent signing.
Also playing to a good level, though.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, Cavani's been excellent.
They're different breed 35-year-olds. They're not your typical ones.
And I've said it on the podcast before that the age to perform at the elite level is getting older. And I think we've seen that with the likes of Ronaldo and probably Thiago Silva have both been very good. And even in the cricket, someone like James Anderson, who's, I think, nearly 39, is going to be playing in the Ashes this winter against Australia. You know, and he says he's got no signs of slowing down. And he's a fast bowler. It's one of the most physically rigorous things you can do in the game of cricket. So, you know, I think that athletes now with the sports science and stuff like that, I mean, Zlatan's in his 40s now, still doing it. So I think that that's part of it now with the sports science and the nutrition, that careers are stretched out slightly longer and you can perform at a higher level for a longer period of time.
Well, but we did have like players like Teddy Sheringham,
yeah,
Ryan
But
Giggs.
The game was different.
They're anomalies though, aren't they?
The game's different from 10 years ago. I mean, in the last 5 years, I mean, everyone will look at when Pep and Klopp came in and pinpoint that as the time when the game changed. And I understand that to an extent, but particularly in the last 5 years, the game has changed to the point where it's so much more professional than it used to be, even 10 years ago. You know, it's just on another level now. And that's why those players who have that elite professionalism, the likes of Silva and Ronaldo and Cavani, these are complete professionals. They're the ones whose careers last the longest. I mean, you look at someone like Ryan Giggs, who played till he was 40. I mean, he took up yoga, didn't he, to keep his muscles supple and to keep himself, you know, fit for games. So I definitely think that the game has changed in that respect. So maybe, you know, once someone does get to their mid-30s, we need to stop going, they're too old to play, they're too old to do this. Because I think that we're being proved wrong on a almost season-by-season basis when it comes to that.
I think the issue is a lot of teams invest in players as assets as opposed to just being the quality they bring on the pitch. And a 30-year-old isn't going to bring a huge amount of return when they eventually do get sold or reach the end of their career. Let's go to Newcastle now, because another day, another link with a player to Newcastle United. This time it's a January transfer. Now, this isn't a player I'm hugely familiar with. Hoffenheim's Austrian midfielder, Florin Grillitscht, I think that might be
beautiful
pronounced.
Beautiful pronunciation.
Well done, Jim.
He's 26. Roma want him as well. Does this feel like more in the ballpark of Newcastle United's realistic targets, Joel, rather than an Mbappe or even a Modric?
Yeah, they were like kind of like the FIFA type rumours you would get. Yeah, as I've always said, and I'm so firm on it, that look at the Premier League table right now and just tell me what top professional footballer, I mean the top level ones, would look at that with a clean conscience and say, this is good for my career. it's good for your bank balance, sure, but in terms of your professional growth, Newcastle United are at the moment at a stage where they need to just survive. And the best players do not want to just hang around and survive. They want to go for the big trophies unless, you know, the main motivator is cash. And for me, players like this, I don't know a great deal about him, but considering, you know, Roma are interested in him, he must have quite a bit of pedigree in terms of, you know, what he's doing in the German league at the moment. But I think for me, and yeah, as I've always said, Newcastle need to be aiming for these types of players where they're competent in the leagues, they're really key players for their clubs, but they're not the, you know, Coutinho types who are just looking for a move purely because they need another payday.
Well, the ones that come in January have got to be prepared to play Championship football next season. That's the truth of it, isn't it? Because you don't want to bring in a Coutinho who then, after 6 months of playing for your football club, is demanding a move because you've dropped down to the second tier of English football.
But I think it's less of a risk, isn't it? Because obviously Coutinho's a player who's always been used to Champions League football, obviously plays for Barcelona, so he'll feel like he has a divine right to be in that competition. Mm. Let's say he went to Newcastle and he dropped down. I guarantee there'd be a clause somewhere in there that says he can go. Whereas players like this, they'll know the situation that Newcastle are in. They know that they're not guaranteed to stay up. They know that they may not go down as well. But they also know that they're backed by a state. So it's a case of the right players need to come in with the right mentality and they're given the right plan, which I think everyone is seeing. And for me, you know, if they do go down, I think that is part of the kind of progression plan that the new owners have come in with, because it is a likelihood that it could happen. And I think maybe it is needed potentially as like a refresh, but of course it would dent their plans by about 2 to 3 years.
I mean, how many players would be at risk as well in terms of not even the ones that they could sign, but the ones that they've already got?
Well, the good thing about Newcastle is they've already got a Championship squad. They're just,
yeah, it's ready made for that. But I mean, players like Alan Maximum, he would be off.
Yeah,
sure.
I mean, but he loves playing for that club and he's got a really good relationship with the fans. And I'm sure his wages would probably take a hike if he gets a new deal before Newcastle get relegated, for example. I mean, would he stay for the project, much like Rafa Benitez when Newcastle went down last time? Wasn't going to stay, and then he did stay, and then he gets them back. Marcelo Bielsa with Leeds, when they didn't get promoted, was going to leave, and then he ended up staying, and then they did get promoted. So it's hard to know with players whether they're going to lose, you know, their assets, whether the clubs, sorry, are going to lose their assets, which are the players, particularly the good ones, if they go down. But I think that these stories that we're seeing with the possible names being linked with Newcastle United, I think we need to wait till Wednesday morning, because Newcastle play Norwich City on Tuesday night. If they lose that game,
what, 9 points adrift?
That is concerning. I mean, they should already be worried. They haven't won a Premier League game yet, and what, 13 games into the season, and they haven't won.
They need to do something in January, don't they?
Oh, for sure.
And you look at the midfield, 100%. That is a particular
area
of concern.
But they can't just stumble their way, limp their way to January. Might be too late by then. Mm. Think of the amount of games they've got between now and January. They've got a game on Tuesday. There's another round of midweek fixtures as well before Christmas, plus all the weekends filled in as well with matches. And then you've got games all around Christmas and Boxing Day there's a game, and then New Year's Day there's a game. So by the time the January transfer window opens, and if they still haven't won a fixture between now and then, I mean, you could look at Norwich pick up form and Burnley keep winning and Leeds start to win games again. You're looking at there could be a 12-point gap to safety. Now, that's not to say they couldn't make it up. We've seen great escapes done in the Premier League before, but I wonder how, after Tuesday, these links will materialise. Will they continue to be linked with players who are of a decent standard and calibre, or will the names like Mbappe and the names like Coutinho start to die off? Because a team that's 9 points adrift at the bottom of the Premier League table, if that is going to be the case after the next game against Norwich on Tuesday, you know, they're not. That doesn't seem realistic, does it? It doesn't seem realistic now, Newcastle being linked with those players, let alone if they were pretty much destined for a drop down to the Championship. But it just goes to show how things can quickly change. We were writing Norwich off, saying they were doomed. I mean, I even asked a question on one of the podcasts a few weeks ago saying, will Norwich reach Derby's tally of 11 points from 2009? And obviously they will, but they were looking so bad under Daniel Farker, but they made the switch to Dean Smith, got some good results since they've done that, and now Newcastle look in real trouble. So that game against Norwich on Tuesday for them is absolutely huge, and I think that could play quite a significant role in what happens in January for Newcastle, particularly when it comes to players.
Although that is why a transfer like Grealish, kind of player coming from the Bundesliga, a middling Bundesliga team, kind of makes sense, because it's improving your squad without overstretching, if you know what I mean. Speaking of January and waiting till January, that's when Manchester City are apparently going to make that long-awaited move for a goal scorer. They've got a few months into the season, decided they need more attacking input. Who should they be looking at, Niall?
I don't know, because there's been some interesting reports recently about Ferran Torres and a possible departure from Manchester City to Barcelona. And I think a few City fans have been annoyed at this. I think that he's concerned about a lack of playing time at Manchester City. Now, he's obviously been injured. He's had a broken foot. So he's been out for the last few weeks and will be out for the next few weeks as well whilst he recovers from that. But he's actually looked very, very good. He's played through the middle for Spain as well. Still only 21 or 22, Ferran Torres. Looks very, very good. But these links with a return to Spain and Barcelona in particular are allegedly born out of a desire for guaranteed playing time. And he feels that in a Pep Guardiola team, he's unlikely to get guaranteed playing time, not because of his talent or because of the way Pep rotates the squad, but because he knows that City are looking for another striker. And Ferran Torres can play out wide, but he's actually looked pretty good through the middle. Gabriel Jesus has kind of moved out to a wing role this season, or a left-sided role, and I think he's one of the highest assist creators in the league, Gabriel Jesus, who's often been criticised for his goal scoring. But I think that is going to be obviously of concern. If Torres does decide to leave and go back to Barcelona, then City aren't just looking for one striker. They're now all of a sudden looking for two. So I wonder who those players are that they're looking at. I mean, Erling Haaland's got to be one of them, surely. Mm. He's got to be one of them. I saw an interesting interview on Ben Foster's YouTube channel, of all places. Ben Foster, the Watford goalkeeper, has his own YouTube channel where he does sort of behind-the-scenes vlogs of life at Watford.
The Fozcast.
The Fozcast, yeah. And he spoke to Josh King, who, of course, is a Norwegian and teammate of his at Watford. And Josh King was asked by Ben Foster about Erling Haaland. And he said, do you fancy him moving to the Premier League? And first thing Josh King said was, well, first off, he's a bit of a freak. I've never seen anyone sort of be as machine-like as him. And second of all, he said, well, he does love Leeds. So I thought that was really interesting, because Leeds United fans, I think they know they've got a special place in Erling Haaland's heart, because he was born there. He was born in Leeds. And
exclusive from Niall. Haaland to Leeds. You heard it here first.
I don't think we'll see Haaland to Leeds. I think if he's coming to the Premier League, it'll be to Manchester City. But I thought that was interesting from Josh King, because he didn't mention Manchester City in that chat that he had with Ben Foster, but he did mention Leeds. So there's no doubt that Erling Haaland is of a focus for Manchester City. If he isn't, then City are doing something wrong, because he should be on a shortlist for every top team in Europe, because he's been that good for Borussia Dortmund since he arrived at the club from Salzburg. So I guess that's one player that they could possibly turn their attention to. Luka Jovic is a player who did really, really well for Frankfurt in the Bundesliga 2 seasons ago, scored loads of goals alongside Sebastian Haller, who seems to have found his feet again at Ajax. He scored in every single one of Ajax's Champions League group games this season, Sebastian Haller. And those two struck up a really good partnership at Frankfurt a couple of years ago, and it got him a move to Real Madrid, but it never really happened for him at Real Madrid, Luka Jovic. I think he's still there now. I think he even had a loan back to Frankfurt at some point last season. But he's a player who's shown plenty of potential. He's young, he fits the profile, and he could be a decent acquisition. I think with the way City play, Jim, that you could sign pretty much any half-decent striker and they'd score goals. I mean, if they can finish chances better off than Raheem Sterling can finish them, then City have got a chance to score more goals. So, I mean, there are definitely options out there for Manchester City. In terms of who they go for is anyone's guess, but I think there should be slight concern over this Ferran Torres story. Whether he leaves or whether he stays remains to be seen. But if he does leave, then that's two strikers or two forward players that they need to buy rather than just the one. And if Haaland is one of those two, presume it gets to that stage, that's going to cost 120, 130 million. We don't know if City will go back in for Kane. My hunch is no. So we'll see what happens there. There are so many good options that City have taken in recent seasons in terms of the players they've signed and their recruitment. You know, it's been excellent, hasn't it? Especially the last 3 or 4 years. Bernardo Silva, prime example. João Cancelo, prime example. Excellent signings. And I have no doubt that Pep Guardiola is the sort of manager who, instead of just buying someone for the sake of it, he'd rather wait and suffer the hard way to get the right person. And we've seen that on a number of occasions from him in the past. So, yeah, I'm excited to see who City get, because they look good without a striker at the moment. So imagine how good they'll look with one.
Exactly. They're doing all right without it. Scored 27 goals so far this season. Goal difference of plus 20. One of only four teams in the Premier League with a positive goal difference, which I don't think I've ever seen before. Only the top four in the Premier League have got a positive goal difference, which feels really unique. And it's partly because three of those four teams are just blowing other teams off the park at the moment in Chelsea, City and Liverpool. Right, we're going to go back to that Burnley story shortly. The game against Tottenham that was called off, and the couple that came from Dallas to not watch a game of football. We'll talk about it next on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back to Football Social Daily. Final bit of today's show. We're talking Burnley Tottenham, the game that never happened because of severe snow up in the northwest of England. What that meant for one couple who came from Dallas for their first ever Tottenham game. For some reason, they decided to go to Tottenham versus Burnley rather than going to a game in Spurs' brilliant stadium in the middle of London. But hey, each to their own. That's the decision they made. The game was cancelled. They never got to see the football after travelling thousands of miles. 31 hours it took them to get from Dallas to Burnley. Thankfully, they posted about it on Twitter and Harry Kane became the hero of the piece, and he's invited them back to Tottenham for a home game in London at his guest in the future.
That's proper football, though. You say, why didn't they watch one at Spurs Ground? Why not watch one at Turf Moor? What a place, eh?
What a place to get stuck.
No, but that's a true, I think it's an interesting microcosm in itself. Spurs' shiny billion-pound new stadium, the best in the world, against Turf Moor. Which is as old school as you can get in the top
With no
flight.
Underground heating, apparently.
So I want to play a little game anyway. I want to talk about some fans who have made equally impressive journeys, similar to Dallas to Burnley to watch Spurs, sometimes for games that have happened, sometimes for games that haven't happened. I want to see how many of these questions, based on those journeys, you can get right. So fastest finger first, buzz in with your name. We'll see who wins at the end of this. First question. Alex Ollier travelled 10,000 miles from Australia to watch Rochdale versus Fleetwood in League One in 2016. The game never happened, but why was it called off?
The volcano.
A volcano in Rochdale, says Joel.
The Icelandic one, I don't know how long ago it was.
That's probably about the right kind of time, but no, it wasn't a volcano.
Fog.
Not bad with fog, it was frost on the pitch. Not particularly interesting, but instead of going to see the game, Alex travelled 10,000 miles from Australia and he got a tour of Scotland instead. That was his prize for travelling all that way. Next question. James Thornhill. He came to the UK from Australia as well to watch his team play for the first time in 2014. Took him 41 hours, 9,500 miles, cost him a grand, but his team won 8-0. Who was his team?
Chelsea.
Chelsea, says Niall. That is incorrect.
West Ham.
Was not West Ham. Ever won 8-0. Can't remember that. It was Southampton against Sunderland. So James got to see his first ever match, got to see Southampton winning 8-0. Next question. So far, no one's got a point. Last year, two Mexican fans travelled 5,000 miles to watch a League One game because it featured their favourite player in the computer game FIFA. He's also the strongest player in the computer game FIFA, or was when they made the journey anyway. Who is the player?
Akinfenwa. Has to be.
Correct!
Yes!
Good grab,
Noel. I thought you said a Mexican player. That's like, who's a Mexican player?
Fans. Oh. And they came over and they got to have a meal with Akinfenwa afterwards.
Are they still eating it?
Next question. In 2006, a fan travelled 6,000 miles to watch Stockport County play because he likes them on FIFA. But where did he travel from? Where is 6,000 miles from Stockport County?
Must be paradise to be that far from Stockport.
I'll give you a clue with his name. His name is Akito Oki.
Oh, Japan.
Correct, Niall.
My gosh.
Very good.
Wow.
Well done.
To Stockport County.
Random, isn't it? Right, next one. Geir Anderson clocked up 36,000 miles in a single season watching Dundee United from his home in Hong Kong in the season 2019-2020. How many times did he see them win during those 36,000 miles of journeys? Joel says two wins. Niall? Closest person could get a point on this one.
Oh, I'm going to go zero. I don't reckon I saw a single win. What, I reckon one, buzzers.
You're correct.
Is it? Oh my God.
Nine games, wins for Geir Anderson. Right, your final question. Everton fan Rick Wee, he came from Kuala Lumpur to watch his first Everton game, but it was called off 35 minutes before kickoff. Why was it called off? It was 30 years he spent as a fan. This was the first game he ever got to.
What year was this?
I don't know. I haven't got the date in front of me.
Was it like an electrical fault or
something? It was Roberto Martinez. It was Roberto Martinez's era because Roberto Martinez met him in the dressing room afterwards.
Oh, I remember seeing this. The guy where he got a picture with them all.
Is it like floodlight failure or something like that?
I thought it was like something electrical.
It's got to be something.
You're not far off. There was a big storm which had damaged the stand.
I remember seeing pictures with them all. It was such a cute little guy as well in the middle of them all, just like getting a huddle picture.
So they have to cancel the game. But well done. I think Niall clearly won that one. Your award, Niall, is a 36,000-mile round trip to watch Stockport County. You set off the train.
It feels
now.
Like that far to get back to Portsmouth and watch us lose, to be honest.
That is it for today's Football Social Day. Don't forget, the games come thick and fast this week. Tomorrow we'll be previewing the Tuesday games, then Wednesday, Thursday we'll keep you up to date with everything that's going on in the Premier League, and you can get the latest team news and match reports on your team on the website sport-social.co.uk. See you soon.
Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.